Hello. You know, I think when I first got into the Cup Series, restrictor plate racing was pretty intense. We were doing the tandem thing that first year. So I came to Daytona, and we were doing the tandem draft, and I was working with my teammate, Marcus Ambrose, and we were trying to figure out how to lock bumpers and push as hard as we could. And then that is, you know, as NASCAR has changed the rules and the draft has continued to evolve, I feel like the restrictor plate racing's almost gone back in time. Like you look back at races to the late 90s, early 2000s, and the races actually look more like that, where you're timing runs and you're trying to block other people's runs. And I feel like it's definitely changed a lot since I've been in the Cup Series, but overall, I don't think it's much different than it was probably 15 years ago.
Who do you think is going to be the next most popular driver now that Junior has retired?
Gosh, I don't know. I think we'll have to wait and see and let the fans ring in. I honestly don't know. I think that a collaborative group of drivers will really steal the fans from, that we're hardcore Junior fans. And I don't think all the Junior fans are just going to go, all right, this is our new guy. I think you'll definitely see some division in that.
Can you talk a little bit about the job that Bubba did last year after replacing you after you get hurt? Because, I'm sure that there's going to be a casual NASCAR fans out there that are going to think, oh, well, they're promoting him because he's African-American. Yeah. Whereas if you're not really looking and paying attention, it seems like he's kind of earned his way on here when you look at the results he's had all the way up.
I'll be honest, I'm here at Daytona Media Day to talk about Eric Almirola and the 10 and Smithfield Foods, so any questions pertaining to anything else, I'm not interested.
Can you talk about how fresh the start feels? And, I mean, this is a big deal with a new team. I imagine Christmas morning.
It is. It's incredible to show up to Daytona with a team like this that has had so much success. They've won championships and won races, and so to have that all at my fingertips is really a dream come true. I'm so excited about just getting going. We have talked all winter long about switching teams and the new opportunity and everything. And I'm a firm believer in talk is cheap, right? Actions speak louder than words. And so I'm tired of talking about the everything that's gone on over the winter. And I just want to go get in the race car and go race and get going with the season. But, looking forward to starting right here at Daytona. And this is a great place for me. I've had a lot of success here. I've won my first Cup race here, won an Xfinity race here a couple of years ago. So I'd love nothing more than to win a Daytona 500. Yeah. Well, I think that's flattering to hear somebody of Kevin Harvick's stature to be able to say that about me. So that makes me feel good. And obviously we're teammates, so he's not going to say anything too bad about me yet. So that's nice. That makes me feel good. And that's really my biggest goal this year is to be able to contribute to Stewart Haas Racing. I feel like they are an incredible organization, and just the 10 years that they've been in existence, championships, tons of race wins, and I want to be able to contribute to that, whether it means, helping my teammates get to victory lane or being able to help in practice, and we make a change that makes our car better, and then they are able to implement that into their car for the race, and that helps them get better. Or rather, it's me winning races and contributing by putting banners up in the shop. I want to do all of the above, and so I think that's mine and Johnny Klossmeyer's biggest focus this year is making sure that we're a valuable asset to the team. Yeah, it is. It's so refreshing to be able to, even already just in practice, getting ready for qualifying here for the Daytona 500, to go and walk into K Kevin Harvick and Kurt Busch and Clint Bowyer's trailer and talk to them about their car, you know, after practice is over, for them to all come to our hauler and all the drivers and crew chiefs and engineers sit down and have a debrief meeting, and to be able to listen to them describe their cars, talk about what they need to do and what they think they need to be to be better for the 150s, and just planning and the preparation and all those things. That is so nice to be able to have that, you know, in my corner. That's something I have not had experience with. So I'm really looking forward to leaning on them and having them make me a better race car driver.
You said yesterday, you know, the pressure came last year, sometimes thinking, all right, if I have a top 20 car, I'm going to get a top 20. And now things are maybe ratcheted up. Is this a chance for you to be like, let's see what the hell I can do in this sport?
Absolutely. I've felt that way from, you know, the moment that I got this opportunity. Was, you know, I've always put pressure on myself to go out and perform and do a good job. But on top of that, I always put pressure on myself to go out and impress people, so that way I could get that next opportunity to try and keep elevating my career. Well, now I've got that opportunity. Now here I am sitting in a premier ride, and I've got that opportunity. So now it's like, hell, let's just go. Like, let's go race. Let's go have fun, and let's see what happens. Like, one of two things is either going to happen. I'm either going to go out and be successful, or I'm not. And so I can't ultimately control the outcome. All I can control is my effort. And, you know, I'll continue to put all the effort in and do the best I can each and every week, and hopefully the results will follow. Sure. Just the team around me, and, you know, the results that I feel like I've gotten with the equipment that I've had for the last 6 years. To be honest, you know, I feel like over the last 6 years we have not had the equipment that I've been exposed to and seen with my own eyes the last couple months. And so to look at that and to say, wow, I actually, on rare occasions, competed against these cars, that gives me a lot of confidence to think, like, now that I have this equipment and now that I'm driving these race cars that are so fast, you know, what can I accomplish?
Is it, like, more tools in the shop, better tools?
It's all of the above. Like, I've been asked that question multiple times, and just thinking about, you know, walking into the shop, driving up to the shop, you know, you look at where I've been for the last 6 years, and just the face of the shop, just, you know, the sheer size and grand, you know, grandness of it is incredible. And then you go in the shop and you see all the Haas CNC machines lined up, and they're all building little trinkets and parts and trying to figure out how to detail every single piece of the car. And that's really where our sport has evolved to. You know, I think back in the day, the races were won on big advantages. I mean, I've sat and talked to Doug Yates. I mean, there was a time when Yates had a 50 to 60 horsepower advantage on the field. Like, those days are long gone. Like, that doesn't happen anymore. The advantages now are pennies stacked on pennies. And when you look at a team like Stuart Haas Racing, that's where their focus is, and I think that's why they're so successful. You know, for me, I don't worry about that. Like, I go out and I race, and if I have a concussion and my doctor's worried about it, they'll tell me. But, you know, I feel like I trust my doctors. I trust, you know, my own understanding of my body. And so if I was in, you know, if I felt like I was in jeopardy or putting myself in jeopardy, then I would make that decision. You know, I'm not a kamikaze pilot. I'm a race car driver. I'm a husband. I'm a father. And so I'm not going to do something to, you know, recklessly jeopardize my health. But at the same time, I love racing more than anything in the whole world, so besides my family. And I that's what I want to do, and I'm willing to take that risk. I know that there's risk involved with being a race car driver, and I assume that risk every time I get in the race car, and I know it, and I don't care. Well, I think it's important anytime. Like, I think every year is important, and I mean, equally so, last year was important when they were literally on the fence about what they were going to do, right? They were on the fence on whether or not they were going to change teams or stay or leave the sport entirely. And I feel like the more that they looked into it and you know, evaluated their position in the sport, they realized that all those fans that sit in the stands and all the fans that, you know, tune into the race broadcast are their customers. And when you look at our sport, you know, there's a lot of meat eaters, and a lot of them love their bacon, love their pork. And so I think that was really big for them to want to stay in the sport and want to stay connected to the fan. You know, and fortunately, they loved me enough and thought that I was a good enough brand ambassador for them to want me to come drive their race car at Stewart Haas Racing. And I feel like over the last several years, they've been happy with all the results from, you know, Monday to Saturday in the grocery store. They just wanted more results on Sunday on the racetrack. And I think that that's really what it's all about.
20 years ago when Earnhardt won his one Daytona 500.
Yeah. No, I wasn't at that race, but I remember watching it. Actually, I think that year we were on a ski vacation out west in Colorado. So we were sitting in our cabin, our log cabin that we had rented for the week, and watched that race. And that was a really special race to watch and to see, you know, finally Dale Earnhardt win the Daytona 500. And I think what made that such a fan favorite and even a garage and industry favorite was people had seen how close he had been so many times. Like, I think the first couple times that he lost, like, the fans that loved him were devastated, and the fans that hated him were happy. And eventually, after the guy lost it, you know, so close so many times, like, hell, even the people that didn't like him wanted to see him win the Daytona 500, because it was just cruel. Like, a seagull takes him out of, you know, winning, and so on, you know, flat tire and whatever else that would creep up and cost him a win. So I think everybody was just happy for him, because he had had so many opportunities at being so close to winning the Daytona 500, and it had been taken away at the last moment. I was a huge Dale Earnhardt fan, yeah. So my grandfather was a big Dale Earnhardt fan, and so, yeah, our whole family was big Dale Sr. fans. Yeah, I don't remember exactly how I celebrated, but I'm sure I was jumping up and down on the couch and was happy and excited, and then probably threw my ski gear on and went and hit the chairlift. Yeah, I am back on it. Yeah, being part of the driver council was really enlightening for me to see, honestly, the effort that NASCAR puts into trying to accommodate everybody. I mean, you know, I think that's the hardest thing that NASCAR has, you know, when they're trying to move the sport constantly forward is, There's a lot of opinions. You know, you've got team owners that have opinions. You've got OEMs that have opinions. You've got drivers that have opinions. You have fans that have opinions. And so, and then you have NASCAR as a sanctioning body that has an opinion. So you're trying to, they have a tough job. And I oftentimes overlook that until I became part of the driver council and really, you know, understood and watched and witnessed the amount of work and detail that goes into every single decision that they have to make, whether it's pit crew, you know, trimming down the pit crew, or penalties or restarts, or you know, the schedule, like all these different things. There's a tremendous amount of effort and thought process that goes into to making the final decision.
And this is still relatively young.
Yep. Yeah, I'm still new to it all, and I think NASCAR is evaluating the process on a constant basis. But, you know, I think one thing that I've seen over last year and going into this year is just the amount of communication, you know, that develops from these different councils, and then to be able to go back and marry that all together, right? You know, NASCAR gets a lot of ideas thrown at them from, you know, like I said, the driver council, the team council, the OEMs, and the fan council, and so they have to go back and discuss all that. And then come back and talk to all the different councils again and say, okay, this is what we've talked about. This is where we're leaning towards going. And then, you know, they have to make a decision. And so I think just continuing that communication process, I think whether it's, you know, in relationships in life or whether it's in relationships at work or whether it's running a Fortune 500 company or running a sanctioning body, communication is key with anything. And so I think this is still relatively new for everybody, and just continuing to hone in on that communication process. Yeah, absolutely. I think for me going into it, and you know, you're sitting in a room with a bunch of champions and very established drivers and very accomplished drivers in the sport. So it is it is a little bit intimidating to kind of speak up and speak your mind, because you know for me personally, I wonder how much my opinion is valued or weighed, because I haven't, you know, accomplished as much as those other drivers. But at the same time, NASCAR has, you know, been very sort of reassuring that everybody's opinion matters, right? Like everybody, sort of like the teacher in school that says there's no dumb question, even though there is. I think NASCAR has been very approachable, and I'm not a very outspoken guy anyway. That's just my nature and my demeanor. So I'm more the guy that sits back, takes it all in, and then when it's over, you know, I may grab one of the other drivers on the council and talk to them privately, or go up to one of the members from NASCAR, Steve O'Donnell or Steve Phelps or one of those guys, and talk to them privately. That's more my nature, and that's just who I am. I'm not the guy to stand up in front of a room full of people and. Yeah, I think there's certainly that level of, you know, comfort that you have to grow into. I mean, that's not my nature. My nature is not to be outspoken and to say this is my opinion and this is what I think we need to do. There's a level of comfort that you have to reach to get to that point. And you know, I think now coming back on the council for the second year, I'll feel more comfortable and be able to voice my opinion, and hopefully I have some success this year and run up front, and I'll feel like my opinion will matter even more just because of my position in the sport as a driver. Yeah.
Eric, obviously you're taking Danica's car. As she prepares to leave and go on to what's next, what type of impact do you think she's had on racing?
Oh, I think she's had a huge impact on racing. I think the number one impact that she's had is that she's brought eyes to the sport that, you know, a lot of us feel would have never tuned in or never came to a race otherwise. So just the demographic that she reaches is far different than what Adele Jr. is going to reach. So I think she was great for our sport from that aspect.
Down the line, do you think we'll see more female drivers coming up in this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the beauty of our sport is that talent, you know, is ultimately the indicator. And so, you know, while diversity may give people an opportunity, like myself, I'm a you know, prime example of that. At the end of the day, results speak louder than anything else. And so, you know, you've got to go out and you've got to make the most of your opportunities. You've got to go out and perform. And this is, at the end of the day, this is a performance-based business. And so, while yes, you know, attracting sponsorship and all of those things matter, if you don't run up front and you're not winning races and you're not competitive, you know, you just won't stay in the sport very long. I'm a big fan of the chicken and yellow rice. They've got huge chunks of Smithfield ham in it, and it's amazing. But then they also got a really good roasted pork with white rice and black beans. It's amazing too.
I feel like I've always gone paella, but I'm
Paella is good, yeah. The roast pork with white rice and black beans is tough. And, you know, I think they've got picadillo is very good, and they've got a palomilla that's very good. So you can't really go wrong. The Cuban sandwich is tough to beat, too. Yeah. Hey, how's it going?
From Dutch NASCAR, from the Netherlands.
Oh, from the Netherlands. All right.
What do you think about the new rule about the ride height?
At the speedway races? Yeah, I think it's definitely, you know, changed the way we drive our cars. It's changed the way we're racing. It's made the cars more unstable now with the lower ride heights and the cars down on the ground, the spoilers out of the air. So it's definitely made for some challenges, even just going in a straight line. So it's going
to
be exciting. Yeah, to all you Dutch fans, just first, thank you for being fans. Thanks for tuning in and watching our amazing sport. And anytime you come to the U.S., make sure you come and visit us and come watch a race. It's an incredible sport.
Thank you, Eric, for your time. Good luck on Sunday.
Yeah, thank you.